Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
By the way, I don't know if you heard, Zach LaVine had 2 points in the first half.
No. Oh, everybody's got their pick
of
devil.
That part's a fact, right? Like that was the box.
The box score doesn't lie. That is a fact.
But it's a weird thing to report. On a sports show.
It's a weird highlight.
It is.
To play.
It's a strange.
His only basket of the first half.
There was the lone basket he had in the first half.
LaVine against DeJounte Murray on a post-up. Turnaround jumper, 18-footer. No. Weak side rebound, Giddey. The handoff to LaVine, and he puts it in with a two-handed dunk. What a pass, what a rebound by Josh Giddey.
The Hawks and Bulls tonight. We listen to it right here on the score. The Atlanta Hawks tonight.
This is an unbelievable win for Atlantaville. I mean, you beat Phoenix. You get in at 2 in the morning here, and the Atlanta Hawks come into Chicago and win by 16 with G League players and veteran NBA players, to say the least, but reserve players stepping up at the right time.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw. 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
This is unbelievable.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Low point of the season? Oh, yeah. That was a really bad loss for the Chicago Bulls. That was awful, and they were terrible. And there's no need to exercise one guy or one name. I think you need a ceremony of sorts to get rid of a lot of people.
Good morning, Molly. Yes, happy Thursday. Last night at the United Center. I don't know if I'm ready to start the show. I'm still Googling Daquan Plowden, whoever he may be. But last night at the United Center felt like more than just a loss of a game. I think that it felt like the confirmation of a direction for the Bulls. We've been waiting and talking and, you know, debating whether or not the Bulls should do this or do that this year, and asking the question, tanking or competing. Last night they told us, and it's not a tank necessarily, but they told us what they want to be this year. That was their third straight loss at home this week.
Mm-hmm.
To a team in the Hawks,
yep,
without 7 guys due to injury. Bringing up guys from the G League.
Like the aforementioned Bowling Green star.
He went to Bowling Green?
Went to Bowling Green.
A little Maction. I didn't realize that.
I thought that's why you were bringing
it
up.
I wasn't trying to even bring some attention to my favorite conference. Keaton Wallace. Any relation to Ben? Where did he come from?
This is Maction!
27 points. The Hawks, they get in at 2 in the morning. They don't care. The Bulls have every reason to win the second game of a back-to-back at home, slept in their own beds.
Ugh.
come to the United Center and not a single Bull scored more than 20 points. That looks like a high school box score.
Yeah, that's unfair to high school kids because they usually get up for games.
Or at least they compete. Honestly,
they do. They get up and look forward to games and they play as hard as they can very often. The Bulls.
So disappointing.
I mean, this has happened before this season.
So disappointing.
Did they think they had won before they walked into the building? Were they just tired? They looked tired.
They looked tired. And it also brought to mind things that Josh Giddey had said a couple weeks ago
exactly
about being too lax or too cool. And there's no excuse for that. And it's surprising a Donovan team can be accused of being not ready mentally and not competing physically to the point where they were beaten by an outmanned Atlanta Hawks team.
He's the perfect guy to identify that sort of thing because he reflects it quite often.
Well, Josh Giddey?
Yes.
Yeah, he did not show up defensively once again. He's got some really deceiving numbers.
Yes.
Because I know that you're consistently, I don't want to say inaccurate, you're accurate in your criticism of Josh Giddey, but it has been consistent. You have not been really swayed by his numbers.
I am not a fan of the way that he plays the game.
I get it.
And the great irony to me is that they traded a guy who everyone was a fan of the way he played the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, don't talk to me about talent and ability. Talk to me about performance in actual NBA games. And one guy leads the league in floor burns and is an unbelievable break-your-rear-end player, and the other guy is not.
So I think when you talk about Billy Donovan, and I'm not going to argue with that assessment because I think the results speak for themselves, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And speaking for themselves means this is the problem right now with the Bulls. And Billy Donovan post-game sounded like somebody who understood exactly where they were in this season and kind of searching for answers himself post-game. Nikola Vucevic tears into his team, according to Io Desunmu, kind of implores his teammates to kind of turn things around. And the Bulls are, you know, they're bad right now. And this week has been very informative, very instructional. And we should pay attention to what they told us. And what they told us is not this year, again. Because, you know, I was at the UC last night after TV, walking around, saw Arturis Karnišovas. He was watching Io warm up pregame and very, you know, affable, very friendly. And I just wondered what was going through his head as he was preparing for that game because the Bulls kind of had to win that to, or at least play better. And Mully, this is the third season in a row at the midway point as we sit here right now where they have no more than 19 victories.
Yep.
They're running in place. The running of the Bulls, indeed.
Yeah, and I know no one cares about this, and I haven't even seen it mentioned, but they're kind of in the same position as the Atlanta Hawks, right? That's kind of been one of their great competitors in the mediocre sweepstakes over the last couple years, 3 years. And they've been neck and neck with who's more awful or who's closer to maybe being good if they're – were like a series of bad accidents. I just can't stand watching them lose to that team and just be reminded that they're somehow behind them when the reality is that that's not a team you should ever be behind.
I don't like them losing to that team when they don't even have their best player. And when you compare the Hawks with the Bulls, that is a like comparison because they have a player in Trae Young who you hear things often associated with what you hear about Zach LaVine.
Yes.
Explosive player.
Yes.
You know, you can get you the bucket when you need it, but not a winning player necessarily. You know, for whatever reason, the label has stuck to Trae Young in much the way the label has stuck to Zach LaVine. And the Hawks come in here, and Trae Young doesn't even play. So you think there's an opportunity. And the Bulls were lulled into that sense of security, a false sense of security. Happens too often with this group. The mix is not working.
The back-to-back, so Lonzo can't play, so you don't have a point guard. I know Io's back, but he's been out 10 games with the calf injury. So it is hard. Every time they turn the ball over, they're giving up a bucket. And that's what's hard to watch, is their awful offense, as bad as their awful defense. And it was just one of those games, totally uninspired, totally flat, tired, just not a very good performance all the way around. They never led in that game, right? They were like trailing.
Never led.
From Jump Street. It was just god-awful.
On this homestand, they're 1-3.
Yeah, I know.
It's a five-game homestand.
We had talked about, hey, this was their chance. If they were going to be good, they're playing all these mediocre teams. They're playing teams that are either mediocre or bad. The problem is, when the Bulls play those teams, they are either mediocre or bad. That they are the ultimate play down to the level of the opponent team.
You know, the thing that bothers you, and I think it's fair, Josh Giddey symbolizes so much of what's wrong with the Bulls. I think part of it for me is Josh Giddey, but part of it to me is the collective carelessness with the basketball.
Oh, God.
They had 20 turnovers. I don't understand how an NBA team...
It's not just turnovers. It's like... Teams can turn the ball over and then get gritty and get the ball back. Not the Bulls. It seems like every time they turn the ball over, they give up a bucket as a result of it.
Yeah, that is a problem. And they kind of have those letdowns. So it's one thing after another. They're not hitting from three-point land. Coby White has gone cold. And Daquan Plowden, your guy from the MAC, that was his NBA debut, by the way.
Oh, I know.
NBA debut. Against the Bulls. And Billy Donovan, we should listen to a little bit of a clip post-game, because as we discussed this throughout the city and why the Bulls midway through this season are now 18-23 after last year at midway point, 19-22, which was the same record as the year before. 3 years in, midway through the season, they are decidedly mediocre. Billy Donovan kind of knows what that looks like and sounds like.
I think it's just like, listen, the game is going to be played through mistakes. I don't think anybody's intentionally trying to make a mistake, but it's how you respond inside the adversity and the mistake. And the repetitively cannot continue to happen. You know, like I thought one of the things defensively we talked a lot about, and again, it was a quick turnaround for both teams. You know, so it's not like necessarily a lot of prep work, but this is the fourth time we've played them. You know, they're going to get into like a lot of stuff with Capella or Congo where they're going to be back cutting. We constantly kept getting back cut, you know, and we got to at some point get it resolved.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very true statement there. Tell you what, they did. It's like when a team can come in, and again, this is a team, a depleted, completely underwhelming group, and they can come in and do that repeatedly to you.
Well-coached team, the Hawks.
But that there's no pride. There's no pride shown.
That's a problem.
That's not a Quinn Snyder issue or a Billy issue. That is a player. That is a given a rat's behind.
At this stage, it's hard to put that on Billy Donovan, who I think understands why now the Bulls really have every reason to dismantle and to make changes and to lean into the idea that this will be a second half of the season that'll be in transition. You look at the numbers, you look at the draft class, and now is the best time to make that argument as the Bulls discuss their future in the second half, what to do. And does that change your mindset in terms of what you're willing to accept for a trade for Zach LaVine or Nikola Vucevic or whoever? Patrick Williams?
Sure.
Got it. A change of scenery. His play is begging for a change of scenery. He looks like a guy that is stuck in his development. And you just don't know if a team will want to take on that contract, but he may still have something left. We've seen it all the time. Guys change teams. Their careers change direction.
Yeah, he was bad again last night. There's no doubt about it. Look, here's the deal. They're not trying to lose. They're just losing. So what does that tell you?
Which makes it easier to pick a lane.
Yeah, you got.
They have picked their lane.
Listen to what they're saying to you.
Yeah. You don't have to listen. You could just watch.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
But that's a statement,
too. It was bad. I mean, it was ruined. I really enjoyed it. I saw Mike Bray was a Notre Dame coach.
Yes.
And he's Atlanta Hawks assistant coach. I talked to him before the game. He's really enjoying himself. He is sort of the sage veteran on the Hawks staff. He recruited Quinn Snyder at Duke when he was Coach K's assistant. And it was just interesting to hear from his perspective, the NBA life and where the Hawks are in their development. And, you know, we talked a little bit about what the Bulls are doing, but
is he enjoying it?
He is really enjoying it because it's such a change of pace. You know, I think that there will be opportunities, I think, postseason for him. He's in his second year on the Hawks bench. Maybe he gets back into college basketball. Maybe he just enjoys being an assistant coach. But he looks great. He's in a great frame of mind. One of the more positive guys you're ever going to meet. But he talked just about the difference in approaches to the NBA game in college. And the Hawks are much like the Bulls in that they're kind of just flirting with mediocrity. He thought it was going to be a tough challenge last night just because they got in at 2 in the morning. The NBA lifestyle, you've lived it.
Sure.
It's like city to city. Where am I when I wake up? And the Hawks come into the United Center, and they look like the team that was well-rested and ready.
Yeah, that's quite a marathon, the NBA. And it's
especially right now, like mid-January.
These are the dog days of
winter,
the NBA.
You wake up, you get into the team bus.
No question about it.
It's like 8 degrees.
Yeah, it's cold, and you're in and out of town, and you got to have a bag packed, and you know you're always on the road. It's fun.
Is there anybody worth keeping?
When you're young
on the Bulls. Is there anybody who wouldn't? If you have a conversation, I mean, you're not trading Montez Bezelis.
No.
Okay. You're not getting rid of him, and you're probably. I don't know who else and would.
Yeah, I mean that's one.
Have
okay.
That kind
see.
Of. Approach with, but that's about it.
Well, the real problem in the NBA, the real problem in sports is that the guys that you want to hang on to are often the only guys that have any value because the other teams are looking at you the same way that you start looking at your roster. So it is a sad reality that even if you like someone, you may have to trade them in order to throw a sweetener into another deal. So, I mean, like, there are, you know, I think that Kobe has come around, like, Io is a pretty good dude. I just think that those are pieces in other trades, maybe. I don't know that anybody is coming looking for any of those guys, but you might have to throw extra pieces in just to get rid of a salary.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. The players who might have the most value to you based on the size of their contracts and the quality of their contributions, those are guys you want to keep around, but those are guys that other teams will want and you might have to throw in a Zach LaVine trade Vooch.
And you've clearly overestimated your star players. They clearly don't command the kind of trade value around the league that you expect to get in return.
Well, now is the time when, frankly, if that is the case, and I am agreeing with you, but if you have done that in the past, now is the time to kind of let go of that idea because even if you don't get as much in return for a trade in a Zach LaVine deal or a Vooch deal, you can justify it because I think you're at the point where if you don't get as much in return and you are losing more frequently, that's not necessarily a bad thing because you want to be in the top 10 of this year's draft. Because now is the time, the second half of the season, you start to shift your sights on that.
You are in the top 10.
You want to stay there.
Well, and I agree with you. And I know what you're saying. You want to be in a better position to get a better player. I understand that. I hate that reality.
I do too. We both kind of do. But
that's where they're at. They
lost three in a row at home.
They're going nowhere.
If they had won three in a row at home, our conversation and tone would be much different this morning.
There might be more panic about they need to get worse.
Well, if they had won the last three games this week, we would have been probably, you and I, clamoring for them to be competitive and to cling to this idea that, you know what, that matters in the NBA. But right now, it's hard to make that argument because they're not really giving us reason to. Billy Donovan sounded like somebody who understood that as well post-game. When asked a couple times, and he was asked some really good questions, Casey Johnson, Joe Cowley, they really addressed the reality and the elephant in the locker room, if you will. And Billy Donovan didn't back down. He almost like embraced the idea that, you know what, you're right. We have to discuss this. We understand why it's a topic of conversation. And moving forward, he didn't give us any reason to believe the Bulls won't be kind of complicit in doing the smart thing.
Well, they I want to be careful how I say it. They didn't improve. Let's put it that way. And they're at the same position they were at. So obviously, they're in NBA hell.
They're in NBA hell.
And there's only one way out of that.
Let me ask you this, and I think we'll move on because we've
got to. And it's not by getting better.
It's not getting better. Have we, this is something we can talk about later, but because I wonder, we're pretty critical of everything the Bears coaching staff does, and we break down a lot of the, you know, Craig Council's decisions. Because we like Billy Donovan and respect the way that he sees the game and explains it, have we given him a little bit of a pass? Do you think that he's responsible in the fact that he's got a team that doesn't always show up effort-wise, and now they had an opportunity with three home games of a five-game homestand, and they have wet the bed, metaphorically. And I think when you look at what this team doesn't do in terms of effort and intensity, sometimes that does point to the coach, and we like the coach. So, but that's been disappointing.
Yeah, I feel like, and we're getting pushback from people. Everybody wants us to start blaming Billy Donovan. I feel like Billy made an adjustment and reacted to the changes made on their basketball team and the fact that DeMar DeRozan is not here. And I've seen them play differently. And I kind of like the way they're playing, given the league and given everything.
The style, the three and the pace.
And yes. And I think that he has responded. I don't expect him to put magic hands on players and make them better than they are or make them fit in better than they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going a flight above him if I'm talking about change. I think that, you know, I'm wondering what AK is doing. I'm mm-hmm. wondering what his plan is because it's his plan. And Maybe I got a blind spot, but I've enjoyed elements of this year because of the change in the way the team has played.
I think it's a really good explanation. I not surprisingly, am kind of with you there because I do believe that Billy Donovan has tried to make adjustments based on the roster that he has. And he stylistically has changed the way the Bulls have played. They responded in time, but they have been inconsistent with results. And we just mentioned the 3 years at midseason, the Bulls have not improved. And the roster really significantly has not changed. And that's on the front office more than it is on the coach.
Is Billy not hitting the right buttons or getting enough out of Patrick Williams? Was Patrick Williams not worth the draft status that he got when he was brought to Chicago?
That's a good debate, but I think it might be 60-40 that he was not worth, maybe even more, 60-40, 70-30. That he was not worth the draft position where he was taken. And he did not have a skill set or the temperament and the approach, intensity, to be the fourth overall pick.
Yeah, it's
bothersome because, you know what? The Bulls, we like Billy Donovan. We thought that maybe they were at a point where we could defend them competing for that spot. But mm-hmm. now after last night, after the last three games, it's deflating.
Yeah, well, they've deflated, and it's time to get other things going. I never thought Lonzo Ball would come back, honestly. That one has caught me by surprise, and I certainly never thought he would come back as good as he is.
It's one of the best stories in the league.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
And he's a very, very interesting player who can help a team. But, I don't know that he has any trade value.
He doesn't because of the money.
Well, and I don't know that he has any future value.
That's
the
thing.
But it's a great story to see.
You don't know if you can move him because of the risk involved in taking him.
Yes.
And the cost involved in having him on your payroll.
And I would suspect that that if you're another team, you would be like, wow, what a great story. That guy's great. I really like his instincts. Move on to the next guy. Like, I don't know that you could. I don't know that there'll be much demand for him.
He would be a guy that if you are going to move him, you would have to probably throw in somebody of lesser value on your payroll.
I don't know that they need to move him. I don't. You know, I mean, it's a lot of money.
They've got to move somebody.
Well,
they've got to start shaking things up.
I think we know who they have to move. I think they need to move on from Vooch.
But you look at the Nuggets who were interested in Zach LaVine earlier this year, and Jamal Murray had like 40-some points the other day.
I know.
Like, oh my gosh, okay, can you stop scoring? Because I thought you needed somebody who could light it up.
Could you please?
Could you please be injured?
Yeah.
No, don't. Nobody wants an injury.
No, we're not.
But Zach has got a dwindling market, and it's the league telling the Bulls they don't want to make a deal. So I don't know where they go from here.
Yeah.
But we do know they're running in place, and they're in NBA hell.
Yeah, I mean,
tough place to be.
Yeah, it's. But I to answer the question as to why I'm not tearing into Billy. Yeah, I really like him, and I like the way they play. And I don't know that he hasn't done something different and tried something different. But I think that the problem is that they've had the same players back, and they are no better. That's the problem. And I think that's kind of on the players. A little bit. It's the NBA, man. You know?
It's the NBA.
That's how the NBA works. The coaching search trots on. We're going to get into that. We got a lot that we have to talk about. The national championship game is coming up, and we've heard from an old friend, which I found really
looking forward
yesterday.
To that conversation. Yeah. Good old Lou Holtz is back in the news,
so
and
beautiful.
The Cubs convention starts tomorrow. A lot of things going on with that as well.
And we'll get to the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Bears are now a dozen interviews into their coaching search, with Mike McCarthy flown in via private plane for an in-person meeting yesterday. When a final decision is made, will we project the Bears' record or worry about their playoff future? They were predicted to win 8.5 games before last season. Could McCarthy better that number? Could Smith or Ben Johnson? Or do you worry about playoff results?
Well, I think that's fun to look at. I think that's a good thing because I think that, you know, a lot of the pushback yesterday was what has this guy done in the playoffs and what has that guy done in the playoffs? And your response is kind of like, wouldn't it be great if the Bears, if we were regularly talking about how they're not winning enough in the playoffs, wouldn't that be ideal given where this team has been for as long as it's been there? So I you know, you just kind of look at, you know, what was their projection last year was 8.5. I don't think we went nuts about it, but I don't think we had them winning 5 games. And I think I think that we thought they had to be above 500 if they were going to return the coach. I felt like the coach needed to make sure that he was in that range. And obviously that went away fairly quickly. Started the season okay, 4-2, and then obviously 10 straight wins is gonna end whatever hope you had of keeping your job, or I guess unless you're the general manager. So I think that the Bears, if they get a good coach in here, can that guy immediately get to where rock bottom was considered among the fan base, 8.5 wins? Could they win 8.5 games next year? I think I could see 3 games going the other way over what happened this year. I could probably see 4 games. I think they could win 9 games. I don't know that anybody's going to come in, take over with the issues they have on the offensive line, the defensive line. They're going to have to fix some things, and that's every year. But they've got some pieces here. They've got some opportunity here. And depending on what you can do with the quarterback, yeah, you could probably win 8.5 games, 9 games. I don't think that's pushing it. I think this team is capable of that, and that's why they got rid of people. So to answer the question, do I believe that Mike McCarthy could do it? Yes, I do. Do I believe Ben Johnson could do it? I actually do. Do I think Arthur Smith could do it? You know, maybe he could. I'm not sure how the degree of difficulty it is. I get it. They're in the division. Maybe, and I don't know this, but is it possible that a step back happens with the Minnesota Vikings, especially if they lose a coordinator, especially if they move on from the quarterback? It seems like 14 wins is easier to project 10 to than it's getting to 15. So I just think that things change from year to year, and that the Bears aren't as far away as we imagine them to be.
It would be the first time Arthur Smith won more than 7 games.
Well, I mean,
why was he?
I said
interviewed?
Maybe on him.
Why? Yeah,
because he did well with Justin Fields.
Did he?
I mean, I think that's got to be one of the reasons. I think they felt that he turned around their quarterback situation a little bit,
and
I think that they look at their quarterback situation.
That was an odd inclusion.
Playoffs.
Playoffs? They won 1 game in the division. And maybe you'd like to count it as 2. Maybe the Caskies are counting it as 2 because it was the Packers last game of the season and it was at Lambeau. So maybe somewhere deep down where you don't want to go, it counts as 2.
How far away were they from winning both games?
Let's win a game. Let's get a coach in here to win some games in the NFC North before we start talking about playoffs. David, I'm with you on Arthur Smith.
That's the pushback that you get is what I'm saying.
I'm with you on Arthur Smith. I have no idea why they talked to him. And again, I've been the one who's been, no problem, talk to his man. That one doesn't make any sense unless you're trying to get a little bit of Mike Tomlin stink in here. I mean, if that's the point, okay? But he's got very little. He's just been around for just a little bit of time, right? He's not been around Mike Tomlin for all this time to really get that deep down stench you're looking for. That's the idea.
So I respect the question. It's fun to look ahead at win totals with prospective head coaches. We don't even know what the roster is going to look like. We don't know who they're going to sign in free agency or who they're going to draft and who's coming and going and staying. So I do think it's a wildly premature to project playoff aspirations, win totals. And I think that the Bears are looking at this maybe all wrong in terms of if that is the way they're viewing this. You have to think big, but you also have to be practical. We keep talking about the Bears' ceiling, and I understand that because it's the nature of sports. But the Bears talking about their ceiling all the time ignores the fact that they've got holes in the floor. The foundation is shaky. The room is in shambles. You need to obviously be aware of what Ben Johnson is capable of bringing, possibly. And you want to think in terms of Super Bowls. And I know people somewhere along the line will mention multiple championships. But how about being a 12-win team first? Or dare I say a 10-win team again? It's been too long. The Bears have had one winning season since Lovie Smith left town. When you look at that, they have a real big need to be realistic about where they are and what they're not. And what they're not is a respectable franchise. In that context, Mike McCarthy comes to town. And Mike McCarthy walks in with a guy that is stable and predictable and credible. And what he can do to your floor gives you hope that he can repair some of the damage that has been done. Then maybe they are a 500 team. Then maybe you start from there. That is your floor. It is fixed if you hire a guy that brings that certainty. If you bring somebody who's never done it before using new tools and doesn't have the experience of a more polished carpenter to keep the metaphor alive, I don't know if you can count on 8.5 or more victories. So I think that the Bears, before they can think big and imagine that what that dream house looks like, you know, get the nice place in the subdivision where you can very comfortably live first. Because right now, nothing is comfortable but the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, these are questions we really don't know the answers to right now.
That's the voice of the Hall of Famer, Dan Pompey, joins Mully and Haw at 8:25 this morning to discuss this Bears coaching search. He's seen quite a few of them. If there is a candidate out there that the Bears coaching search, do you believe, has either gotten overlooked or neglected to receive the attention that he deserves? Or do you think that the Bears cannot afford to hire somebody on proven, unproven, even if they have interviewed a candidate who qualifies as obscure?
Well, I don't understand the Arthur Smith inclusion, but we've talked about that, and I hope that's the last time we mention it. I want to be open-minded to the idea that two assistants that have been maybe somewhat overlooked, maybe I'm speaking about myself more than anybody, but Todd Monken has some respect around the league. I don't think he has experience as an NFL head coach. I don't know what him coaching Southern Miss, if that gives him as a college head coach there the experience that would be necessary for him to be a head coach in the NFL matters or not, but he does have some local connections that I can't ignore, and he does have a personality that maybe gives him a distinction among a group that's 21 deep. Maybe he's a guy that we tend to overlook, and he sounds like Adam Schefter mentioned he will be interviewing Friday virtually, the offensive coordinator for the Ravens. Aaron Glenn probably fits a category as well. Defensive coordinator, defensive-minded head coach, but a guy who is respected around the league because of the quality of his character and how his words resonate with players. So both sides of the ball, both coordinator types, guys who, when we make lists, aren't necessarily high on them, or at least on mine, but I want to keep an open mind to both of those guys who, to answer the question, they're not obscure choices or guys who you wonder why they're on the list. They're just guys who haven't gotten the attention some of the other more proven coaching candidates have, like Carroll, like Flores, like Mike McCarthy.
Aaron Glenn would be the guy for me, especially after hearing him talk yesterday, and then got me down a rabbit hole of looking around for Aaron Glenn audio and times that he has talked. You don't hear position coaches and coordinators talk a whole heck of a lot. Like what he had to say, and I don't think he's nearly gotten enough attention so far.
I saw that Mike Kafka is going to be one of the head coaches at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile. They're taking over that, the Giants earned that right, and Kafka was named the coach of one of either the North or the South team, I guess the North team. So that's kind of cool, just that that he's got that opportunity, and a lot of people were like, Mike Kafka, what, did you see how bad the Giants were? I think he's a young guy, he's local guy made good, and, you know, well thought of and has applied for and been interviewed for different jobs before. So, you know, this list isn't as bad as some people are making it out to be. It is very extensive, and I think that's the confusion regarding it. But it isn't like you shouldn't talk to that guy or you shouldn't talk to that guy. We'll see how these careers end up going. It'll be interesting if, you know, in 10 years, they've interviewed, you know, 7 NFL head coaches at this point. So we'll find out. But, yeah, I think that you've got to take a leap of faith and trust that their process, big as it is, has identified some of the right people and that they have good reasons for the people they want to interview. As we've said many times, there are different tiers of coaches, and there are a whole group of guys that would be more likely to be seen now than other guys on the list. And, you know, you got to keep that in mind when you're talking about the number of candidates.
Yeah, it's a good question.
How much should we read into the Bears sending a private jet to fly Mike McCarthy to Halas Hall and interview in person on Wednesday? Out of character, or is this going to be the new on brand?
I'm not obsessed with it. I think Mike McCarthy is a legitimate candidate for a head coaching position, and the Bears moved quickly to get him in here. I don't know that means they're going to move quickly to hire him, and I don't know that it means that, you know, it could be Mike said, I want to come in. They said, you know, here, we'll send the jet. Or they knew they had to treat him differently than other candidates. I don't have any insight as to why he is being flown in. He is one of two in-person candidates that they've brought in thus far. And you know, I find it kind of fascinating to think that he was up there and they went out to dinner and all that stuff. Feels like this is a process that they're going through. They're going to whittle down the candidates. They should be pretty much through the list, right? Shouldn't they? Where are they at, 12 now? You give them a few more days by the end of the weekend. Maybe they're ready to start doing more in secondary interviews here in Chicago. So I don't know that to be the fact. I don't know what their timetable
maybe
is.
Maybe by the 20th, when you can start meeting with people in person, they will be done interviewing
Tuesday,
the virtuals.
Right?
Monday, I believe.
Monday is the day? Okay. Well, maybe they'll be ready for that, more of that.
Well, I'll say that I want to grind on this one. So I think we're making an assumption, sending a private jet to fly Mike McCarthy to Halas Hall. So we need some more reporting on this. If we're going to believe that Mike McCarthy said to the Bears, I want to come in, are the Bears going to say, what's that?
I don't know that that's the point.
Well,
they may have decided to bring him in.
Well, but I'm saying, but I think that's a big part of the private jet part. So if he's the one who asked to come in, why would the Bears send a private jet to bring him here?
Because they're serious about hiring him.
Well, but that's, everybody's assuming that they're into hiring him because he did the in-person interview. But if he's the one that broke the protocol and said, I'll come, but I want to come to see the facility, and then the Bears genuflected to him, I think there's a lot of things that we don't know. I'm shocked if it's true that he's the one who wanted to come here.
We don't know that.
I just said it. Okay, so then we can't even ask the question then. We don't know anything. All we know is that the Bears completed a job with Mike McCarthy in person. That's what we know.
Well, we know this. Courtney Cronin from ESPN, who's pretty well respected, along with Kalen Kaler, and both are plugged in, reported that Mike McCarthy flew from Dallas to Wheeling, Illinois in private accommodations, a departure from previous team protocol. If the report references previous team protocol, the implication is the team protocol was used and applied to this interview process. So if this interview process is different from the rest, it is significant because it does separate Mike McCarthy from everybody else. So the reference to team protocol is what forces a lot of people to jump to the conclusion that they are treating this candidate differently, as they should, frankly, as they should. He's got a Super Bowl ring. Nobody else on that list does outside of Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll has the age factor to consider, and he wasn't treated I think, with the respect that he probably has earned last week when he had a virtual interview, I believe. So the reference to team protocol to me suggests that this is a different situation. This is a serious move by the Bears. It's important to remember the optics matter. Finally, somebody at Hallis Hall gets that. Kevin Warren probably is behind this because he likes to be somebody that has the image complimented, and he's image conscious. This is good for the Bears' image, the symbolism of sending a private jet to pick up the former Cowboys coach, flying him in, taking him out, whining and dining. So Mike McCarthy gets the luxury treatment, and I think they probably do have a different idea for him than they do with, say, Drew Petzing or Anthony Weaver, and they should. So this is, I don't know if it's the new on-brand Bears, but it does show you that they understand that Mike McCarthy would give them something the other candidates may not, and I think that's why we should believe that he is a different type of candidate who's probably on a different tier.
Was it Dan Quinn who got a coach seat?
Yes.
To come.
And how do we know that? Dan Quinn told us so.
Yes.
So,
I'm just saying.
The Bears are not insensitive to that.
No.
We know that probably.
Warren said they're going to treat people first class.
Yes. And so that is why I think when you look at the virtual nature of the rest of the interviews and this private jet, private plane status for Mike McCarthy shows you that somebody there is paying attention. So that's a good sign.
Thank God.
I don't know if that answered the question.
What did you make of the Bulls' performance last night? Were they playing down to the level of competition or flat and listless in the second of back-to-back games? Any idea what to expect from this team on a nightly basis?
Yes, you can expect inconsistency. You can expect the unexpected. They are a team that is bound to disappoint you. This was a week where the Bulls could have told us that they were serious about competing and maybe even contending for a playoff spot. But instead, the week will be remembered as the week where the Bulls told us who they are and what they're not. And what they're not is a playoff team. And what they're not is a team that deserves the benefit of the doubt. They don't compete on a nightly basis. That's on them, the players. That's on them in terms of Billy Donovan. In fairness, as much as we respect him, we have to recognize the fact that he's not getting through whatever it is about the message. It's being lost. They're not competing. They've got a team with the Hawks who had seven players down. The guy was making his NBA debut. They got G Leaguers and veterans who you never have heard of. And they come out and they beat the Bulls handily after getting here at 2 a.m. in the NBA dog days. So the Bulls have to be broken up now. The trade deadline is less than a month away. The trade market for Zach LaVine and Vooch hasn't heated up. They need to turn on the stove. They need to heat it up. They need to rekindle it. They need to do whatever you want to do to make sure that you are different after the trade deadline. And frankly, that you are protecting your top 10 draft pick. Because that's what it's all about now. The future. The future isn't now. And last night reinforced that.
With the Bulls, you can always expect the unexpected.
Is that it?
It is.
Okay. I think that, yes, would be my answer. Did the Bulls, what did I make of their performance? Substandard, below standard. There has to be a standard, and they haven't hit it yet. Were they playing down to the level of competition? Yes. Were they flat and listless in the second half of back-to-back game? Yes. Any idea what to expect from this team on a night-to-night basis? No. And I agree with David. I think that I'm at a point now by halftime last night where I am like, okay, just list the team for sale. I mean, every player on it, you know, and I don't know how you go about it. Like, hey, we're hanging up the shingle. It's a going out of business sale. Everything's half off. Come for anyone. I think that's where I'm at with this team after last night's performance. It was that bad, that disappointing. And frankly, you can't roll the ball out like that and expect people to turn up. It's just not fair. So go ahead. You know, List them all. List them all is available.
Terrific question. Need to get that answered. Don't have it for you today.
Voice of Bruce Levine. He's here at 725. How badly do the Cubs need Alex Bregman? And does the urgency, if you sense some, make them more willing to perhaps strike a deal that is short-term but big money? Is Bregman worth it?
I think they really do need him. I think they need something. They are not done yet. I think they need some cover at the third base position. I think they need a little more help there. Now, that's a lot of help there. That's a guy that you bring him in, you understand that it's not Matt Shaw's time. You might be able to get him sometime, but this is a starting player. I mean, if you sign him to the kind of money he's looking for, whether it's for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, then you're not going to see your rookie develop, and that's okay because you can still wait on that. There's no reason that you have to force that kind of an issue. I don't know enough about how well they believe he will be, how good he will be, how well he will play to say that they should just, you know, lock him in there and move on in life. I think I think the way they've kind of handled things with PCA has been pretty good. They let him play. They saw him advance. They saw him take another step, and now they're relying upon him. I think that's the way to do it, rather than just have a guy kind of thrown to the wolves, and if you sink or swim, depending on how that guy plays. So I think that, they got money. They should spend the money, and this would be a good player to bring in. I wouldn't give him a long-term deal. I think if you get 3 years and let him come back on it, 3 years at, you know, $75 to $100 million seems like enough money.
Boy, that's a lot of money. The Cubs need stuff still. They should not be done. But I think you need to read the room, read the free agency market, and who are you competing against for Bregman's services? So I don't think you need to.
Red Sox would give him a short-term deal, too, does.
I think they really have to be responsive here to the moment they find themselves in. And that's a moment that screams urgency. You've got a team president that understands that every year matters, but this one probably matters more than most. It is the final year of Jed Hoyer's contract. And I think that urgency was reflected in the way they pursued Kyle Tucker and got him. Kyle Tucker, realistically, is not going to sign with the Cubs during the season, and the chances of him coming back to Chicago for $500 million he might be worthy of paying by somebody at the end of the year, if it's an MVP caliber year, and the hope is it will be, then he likely is to walk. If you've got 1 year of Kyle Tucker, if you've got one more year to make a run and prove that you are still worthy of putting together a playoff World Series caliber roster, then you are Jed Hoyer, and you are hell-bent on overpaying for Alex Bregman. Structure a deal that is creative. Maybe it's 3 years, $75, $80, $90 million, but the first year is front-loaded with opt-outs. You've got to overspend maybe in 2025 because you are putting everything into that next season. You are making sure that you are removing the doubt from your lineup. And as much as we love Matt Shaw, and we fall in love with these prospects, and God bless PCA and Owen Casey and Michael Bush and all the guys, Ben Brown's going to close. Yeah, they're maybes. They're definite maybes. And prospects aren't proven players. You know what Alex Bregman is? A proven player.
Right.
Get him.
Can he go? Foot race. Glenn will catch him. Touchdown. Pick six, Notre Dame.
How much did you enjoy reading legendary Notre Dame coach Lou Holtz, now 88? Take a gratuitous shot at Ohio State's Ryan Day on X, writing, if Notre Dame doesn't win, it's because we want to preserve Ryan Day's job. End of tweet. Holtz picked the Irish to win by 3. Will Day be looking for Lou like he did back in 2023 after Lou Holtz questioned the Buckeyes' toughness in big games under Day's leadership?
I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
I love hearing that clip. I love this question.
Any excuse.
I love hearing Lou Holtz still living rent-free in Ryan Day's head. He's 88. He's 88, and he still got it. And Lou Holtz was the coach back in 88 when Notre Dame last won a national title. I love that Lou Holtz is still paying attention to the point where he's involved in the conversation about this matchup, which is so filled and delicious with drama. I cannot wait for Monday night. I cannot wait to see Notre Dame and Ohio State. You know, Lou Holtz, speaking of him, he's a guy that is a great resource for this matchup when you talk about the rich history of both programs. He was an assistant coach for Woody Hayes on the 1968 national championship team for Ohio State, and then he led Notre Dame to the national title in his third season in South Bend. You know what it is this year for Marcus Freeman? His third season in South Bend. There's a lot of symmetry. I love that now Ryan Day has to think about or address or even just deal with Lou Holtz for a hot minute because he should be focused on other things. But Lou Holtz knows what he's doing, and it's great to hear from Lou again.
When they have their media day for this big game down in Atlanta, I really hope somebody brings this up.
Oh, that's so funny. It's so fun. It's just such a tweak, and it's just such a, you know, shooting a little peanut shell at the guy after what happened the last time. And it's so funny. I laughed out loud at this one. I think Lou Holtz, I hope he comes back again and says something about toughness, because, you know, the Irish, the way you win that game is you coax them into fighting you in the trenches a little bit. And we know that Ryan Day will take that bait because he did so against Michigan. So I think it's fun stuff that if a guy shows that you can get in his head that you decide to live there rent free. I love Lou Holtz. I thought it was really a funny moment. And as we say, any excuse to hear where's Lou Holtz right now. And Lou also said he's going to go to the game. So he literally, you know, Ryan Day might be able to find him.
He'll be on the Notre Dame sideline a bit.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right. We've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
The best game this weekend in the NFL features the lone road favorite and a pair of quarterbacks short only playoff success in their careers. Who needs a victory more in this one? The Bills' Josh Allen or the Ravens' Lamar Jackson? Will either team be considered a 2024 failure if their season ends in the divisional round Sunday? Do you like visiting Baltimore being favored by a point?
This is clearly the best game of the weekend, and this is a great weekend because the Final Four in each respective conference, you love the teams involved. You love the coaches involved. We can have a conversation about which coach has the most pressure, which quarterback has the most to gain or to lose. And it doesn't get any better than Bills and Ravens. I think the Ravens are the team. I picked them to win the Super Bowl going into the playoffs when we talked last week. Nothing that I've seen has made that feel like a bad pick. I do feel differently, though, about maybe most people that I've heard. I don't agree with Lamar Jackson has more at stake this weekend than Josh Allen. I think Lamar Jackson is a two-time MVP that put up credentials this year that makes it easy to understand why he could be a three-time MVP. He's staring at a Hall of Fame induction. This guy is a Hall of Fame quarterback. I know he doesn't have the playoff success and he doesn't have the ring to back it up. I'm not going to say I don't care, but in spite of that, this guy has had success beyond anybody's wildest dreams when he was drafted at the end of the first round. And people thought in the NFL he might be, well, you know, could he be a wide receiver? Remember those conversations? How absurd. Lamar Jackson has proven himself as an elite, historical figure in the NFL. Josh Allen, on the way to that status, he's not there. He's a rung below Lamar Jackson. He has the most to gain and, frankly, the most to lose by losing this game to me on Sunday. So when they play, I think the Ravens are the team to beat in the AFC by my estimation. The Chiefs are still, I think, in fairness, the team to beat. They're the defending champions, two-time defending champions. But in this game alone, yeah, I'd say the quarterbacks with the most to lose, Josh Allen, and he faces the most pressure going in.
I usually hate the line. I've been waiting all day for Sunday night, but I can't wait for Sunday night. 5:30 kick. This is going to be a really good football game. And there's also now talk that cold and weather will be a factor in this one. It's also supposed to be a factor on Sunday in Philly, the Rams and Eagles. Weather is supposed to be a thing there, too. And I'm guessing it's going to be cold in Kansas City on Saturday for Texans at the Chiefs. But as far as who has more on the line, I believe Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson needs to get to the AFC title game again. And I think he needs to beat the Chiefs to cement himself where he wants to be. But I am really looking forward to another Bills-Chiefs matchup. I think that's what's going to happen right now, just for the sake of the conversation. Not that it's a huge difference, but it is interesting. We do like to talk about it. This game has now moved to Pick'em, according to Circus Sports Illinois. So it's a little, you know, there's been a little movement, right? So that's interesting, I think, as we're talking about this question. And that is also part of why this is, on paper at least, the best game to look ahead to in this divisional round of the playoffs.
It should be Pick'em, Dustin. Flip a coin to determine this one. You know, both these guys are 28. I think that Josh Allen turns 29 in May. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Lamar turned 28 last week. So Allen's actually older than him, as bizarre as that may seem to be, because he feels like he hasn't been around as long as Lamar. But Lamar has had an unbelievable NFL career. They both play. I've had great careers, frankly. And Lamar is just a different cat altogether. And he's usually the guy that is brought up when you ask about different ways of playing the position of quarterback. And, you know, even though he's a good throw of the ball and has great numbers with that, it is his exceptional running ability that kind of makes him stand out from other players. And there is always that sort of whisper that, yeah, that doesn't work in the playoffs. So I think Lamar needs it more just because he's been an MVP twice in a row and could be a third-time MVP here, and he is on his way to the Hall of Fame, and you'd like to see him get more credentials for that. I think he's, you know, I think Mahomes is already there, let's put it that way, and I think Lamar is on the cusp, so it'd be great to see him win this game. It'd be huge for him to win this game. I think Lamar probably needs it more than Josh Allen, but not much more. Josh Allen, that's maybe what's great about this. Both guys have an unbelievable seasons. Both guys need this win to sort of, you know, underscore their career. They need to win a Super Bowl. So I think it's going to be a phenomenal game. It is number one with a bullet on this on your playoff chart at this point. All right. We've got your call's next, 312-644-6767 is the number. Mully and Haw on the score.
I'm a winner. I know how to win. I've won a championship.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. He is a winner. He is Mike McCarthy. He was in Lake Forest on Wednesday night. Got here via private plane. Who paid for it? The suggestion is that, according to Courtney Cronin's report, along with Kalen Kaler, flew a private jet from Dallas to Wheeling, and I would think that, according to team protocol, the way it was referenced, the Bears picked up the tab, sent a jet,
I hope so.
And Mike McCarthy is in town and was the next coach on the list. What makes it different is that he was the second coach to interview in person. I don't know how Ron Rivera got to Halas Hall on Sunday. Was he in town because he has ties to Chicago? But Mike McCarthy was given the first class VIP treatment because I think that his candidacy is different from the rest. You can debate whether or not that's a right or wrong thing, but I think it's a good thing because the Bears have to recognize the difference between a guy who comes to them with a Super Bowl ring and a guy who might not have been a head coach before, like so many on their list.
Yeah, I would say that you would hope that they took care of them first class, and I'm sure they did. They've said that they were going to do that, and you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and you can't pretend like you're a mom and pop shop. I mean, you've got to be able to treat people the right way and come across the right way. The idea that Dan Quinn was given a coach ticket, that, you know, no other team in the league has given you a coach
ticket. It's a bad look.
Which is why he mentioned it, frankly.
And it's a lasting impression.
It's the wrong kind of impression you want to make on
a coaching search or on a coaching candidate.
That's right.
This is 2025.
It's not done that way.
You want everything about your organization to be first class. That, frankly, is what we expected to happen or assumed would happen once Kevin Warren took over 2 years ago or was named the president 2 years ago this week.
Yeah.
In those 2 years, how dramatically have things changed? Not dramatically enough.
Not yet.
Frankly.
Right.
They don't have a stadium site and they are still in shambles from a football perspective. This coaching search is that important because of those realities. They still need a stadium site, and they need a lot of momentum going into that. That's why the head coach has to be the right guy. And from a football perspective, they picked the wrong guy, both as the head coach to retain last year and the offensive coordinator to help that. So there's so much riding on this choice. That's why it's so important.
And I will say again, I don't think they're as bad as their record showed. I think that they had a substandard season. They were below any kind of, if they had any standards, right, then they would have won minimum three or four more games.
That's very interesting. You keep saying that, but to remind us of that this morning, that to me suggests that this job, because of what you just said, if this is a 9-win roster with playoff talent, this is a better job than Vegas. This is a better job than New Orleans.
It's definitely a better job
than this is a better job than Jacksonville. Is it a better job than the Jets? Is it a better job than Dallas? That's debatable, but that's in that caliber. And I think that maybe this is a better job than, if you believe what you're saying, and I don't disagree necessarily, but this is a better job than it's being portrayed.
I think it's hard to lose games. I think it's hard to win games, but it's just as hard to blow games at the end and lose. I mean,
but they
how
did it.
In the name
they,
of
they,
God,
they mastered it.
How do you lose that Washington game? That is flukish in the way you lost that game. And there were a few of them. So, I understand where the problems are. I understand where the improvement is needed. But I don't think that it's nearly as bad. It's interesting because you would hope that Ryan Poles coming back would want to have as many of the pieces that he had in place and that he would build the team a little differently. I don't think this is a teardown. I think that they went through a teardown. I don't think whoever comes in here is going to have to get the thing down to the screws like maybe once before.
Good point. Good reminder. And when we come back, I want to explore that a little further in terms of how Ryan Poles' presence and the fact that he is returning has affected the search or could potentially dictate who's coming and who isn't.
All right, 312-644-6767. A lot of people want to check in. We'll get to your calls next. Mully and Haw on the Score.